Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
All right, welcome in. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty with you on this, well, thunderstormy Monday night. Got the lightning in the background, but, you know, what's new? We live in Mobile, Alabama. Summer storms are just normal at this point. Corey, how you doing tonight?
Dalton, I'm great. Just got a little wet coming into the studio this evening, but I hope everybody's trying to stay cool if they can throughout the day and beat this heat.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, what we've all been hoping for over the last few months is that sports will return to normal, and specifically that college football will be played this fall. And with the news last week, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 saying that they're going to conference-only schedules, the Ivy League canceling their seasons completely, the Patriot League announced they're canceling theirs, the junior colleges say that they're not going to play theirs this fall. It's looking bad. It is not a good forecast for fall sports coming up in the next few months. And then, I don't know if you were listening to the Paul Feinbaum show, but the SEC athletic directors met earlier today, and it looks like they will continue to meet for, the near future as they determine whether or not the SEC will move to a conference-only schedule or whether football will be played at all this fall. And if you missed that interview with Greg Sankey, he kind of basically said that there won't be any decisions made from the SEC until later this month. You know, we're only in the first half of July, so we've got about 3 weeks left here in the month. They're going to wait until later in the month to make any decisions. And so much of this right now rides on the national statistics, and I would guess specifically the statistics in the southeastern parts of the United States and whether cases continue to rise. Also take a look at the fatality rate and whether that starts to climb even higher. But, you know, even if the SEC decides to play football, when you have other conferences deciding that they will only be playing conference-only schedules, that puts the SEC in a tight spot.
It really does. I mean, but it's a situation, Dalton, to where you start looking at why players are back on campus now. It's not mandatory that you come back. It's, air quote, voluntary that the student athletes return to campus to participate in these workouts at this point in time. Now, when the rubber meets the road and you actually start to enroll in classes, usually they come in, start getting prepared, start going to their two-a-days or what have not the first week in August. But it's very important that, again, safety is paramount for all of these student athletes. So the question has been asked, why so many schools have allowed their student athletes to return voluntarily and continue to get the coronavirus? I mean, LSU and Clemson players had over 30-plus players contracted or tested positive for it.
Yeah, and, you know, players have been returning to campuses now for a few weeks. They've been doing these voluntary workouts, but it's not like they're in a bubble. And we'll talk more about the NBA, the MLS, and the NHL bubbles coming up later in the show. But we're talking student-athletes here and teams that have over 100 players on their football teams. And it's going to be nearly impossible to keep them separate from the rest of the campus, from the rest of the cities, their families. And the way this virus is moving around right now, it's just, you know, it's easy to catch, and there are a lot of people that are catching it if you check out the statistics every day. So it'll be really interesting. I think the SEC, it's a good decision for them to wait. I think it's interesting that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 went ahead and made these decisions so early, because even though football's right around the corner, you still have at least a month. You have at least a month to figure this out. And that it seems that's what the SEC is doing. I would expect the ACC to announce that they're going conference only here soon. I think the Big 12 and the SEC will be the last to make that decision. And we'll talk later in the show, too, what does that mean for the smaller schools, the non-Power 5 conferences? They're the ones that are really getting left out in the cold on this. And some of the schools, like South Alabama and Troy, who now every now and then they'll pull out a big win, like South Alabama did against Mississippi State a few years ago. But for the most part, they go, they play the role of cupcake, and they collect their money. unfortunately, the collecting the money part will be difficult if you're not able to play those SEC teams. So we'll talk about that some later in the show. Also coming up in the next segment, an interview with Joe Nyland, the athletic director for Spring Hill College. It'll be outstanding. I can't wait to talk with him about what he is doing, what the rest of the conference there that Spring Hill plays in, what their plans are for the upcoming fall sports schedule. But first, I do want to get to a couple headlines from this weekend. NASCAR and PGA Tour and the UFC continue to roll on as the rest of these sports prepare to get back on the court, the ice, the field. And in NASCAR and PGA, it was a huge weekend for some of the young guys. In NASCAR, Cole Custer, 30 years after the release of the movie Days of Thunder with Tom Cruise, Cole Custer went from the third row to the lead in a green, white checker finish yesterday to win the Quaker State 400 at Kentucky Speedway. He became the first rookie to win a Cup Series race in nearly 4 years. He's only had 20 Cup Series starts, and it was an outstanding finish to the race. Now, the rest of the race, there wasn't a whole lot of passing, but at the end, Custer was on the outside of the third row when they took the green flag, ended up passing Martin Truex Jr., Ryan Blaney, and Kevin Harvick on the last lap coming out of turn two. He got the lead. He ended up winning. Just an outstanding win for the young 22-year-old. Truex ended up finishing second, and then Matt DiBenedetto third, Kevin Harvick fourth, which is very low on the list for Kevin Harvick after these last few weeks, and then Kurt Busch finished fifth. But, you know, Corey, I'm interested this Wednesday night, NASCAR, they're heading to Bristol Motor Speedway. They're going to have the All-Star Race. Now, normally, the All-Star Race is held in Charlotte. I've actually been a couple times to that All-Star Race. They moved it to Bristol this year because of the pandemic. They're going to have the Fast and Furious lights under the cars, you know, the neon glow coming from under the cars. But it's about who's in the stands this week. They're expecting between 20 and 30,000 fans at Bristol Motor Speedway on Wednesday night, the biggest sports crowd in the country since the pandemic basically halted all sports back in March. And you think 20, 30,000 fans, that's a lot. Well, Bristol actually holds more than 160,000. Still, this is an experiment that the rest of the sporting associations in the nation have not yet tried.
Yeah, I mean, it's something where I know the fans have to be happy about it, and we know that NASCAR ratings are continuing to climb each and every week, and because their schedule got pushed back, there are multiple races. But you look at a rookie in Cole Custer being the first rookie in 4 years to have an opportunity to win a major race in NASCAR. That's big news.
Yeah, huge news. And then in golf, another young guy got a big win, and not much of America was actually able to watch this live as it happened. But 23-year-old Colin Morikawa, who started the tournament up there in Ohio on fire, he led quite a few strokes after the first two rounds, kind of fell back during the third round and then had to come back in that final round against Justin Thomas. And Morikawa ends up beating Thomas in a three-hole playoff to win the Workday Charity Open. Thomas actually looked like he was going to win until those final three holes. He held a two-shot lead over Hovland as he entered the final round and a three-shot lead over Morikawa. Well, fast forward to holes 16, 17, and 18, and Morikawa ends up hitting two pars and a birdie while Thomas bogeyed two of those final three holes. But what happened in the playoff was just absolutely magical. And the PGA, I don't know how they screw this up, one of the only live sports on TV. And they did have to move the tee times up earlier in the day yesterday because there was a threat of rain at Murfield Village. But you could only watch the live ending of the round on the CBS Sports app. It was nowhere to be found on cable. You had to get the app and you had to watch it. And if you weren't able to watch that, you missed a heck of a finish. On the very first playoff hole, it looked like Thomas was done. He was 50 feet from the cup. Morikawa was half the distance closer to the cup, and Thomas hit just an outstanding birdie putt from 50 feet. They said it had 10 feet of break. And so then you think, well, it's over for Morikawa. Thomas just knocked in a heck of a putt. Morikawa then holed his 25-foot putt. So they both tie on the first playoff hole. They tie again on the second hole. And then on the third playoff hole, Thomas ends up hitting his drive directly behind maybe the smallest tree on the property, ends up bogeying. Morikawa wins his second tournament as a PGA Pro.
That's huge. And when you're talking about being able to come back in the clutch situation in the playoffs, but what I'm looking forward to is Tiger Woods returning and the needle moving in golf, especially with no spectators being allowed for the duration of this PGA season. And this week at the Memorial Tournament, when you have Tiger Woods back healthy, this is the event that he chose to come back to, that he felt he would be at his best coming back to professional golf. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and all the big guns will be out this weekend. Jack Nicklaus's tournament, the Memorial Open, Tiger's out there, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Justin Thomas, who I'm sure feels burnt after this weekend when that was his tournament to lose, and he did lose it, but should be a great PGA tournament coming up. And then some sad news for our city here in Mobile. A baseball legend, Frank Bowling, passed away Saturday at the age of 88 after a battle with cancer. The former Major League All-Star spent 12 seasons in the big leagues. He was first picked up by the Detroit Tigers. They traded him to the Milwaukee Braves back in 1960, and then he played the rest of his career there except for one season after the Braves moved the franchise to Atlanta. Graduated from McGill Institute and then Spring Hill College right here in Mobile, and coming up, we'll talk with the Spring Hill Athletic Director, Joe Nyland, about that and a whole lot more. But Frank Bowling passed away at the age of 88. I don't know if you know the Bowling Brothers Boulevard there next to Hank Aaron Stadium, named after Frank and his brother Milt. A two-time All-Star, he won the AL's Gold Glove Award. He will be missed, and he is a member of the Mobile Sports Hall of Fame. All right, coming up, we'll talk with Spring Hill College Athletic Director Joe Nyland. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Ian Blair running the boards for us, doing a masterful job as always. And guys, I'm still waiting on those masks that I ordered from Champion a couple weeks ago. I ordered them just in time for the Mobile mask ordinance, and I might get them just as the pandemic ends. So I'll keep you posted on that. Until then, I'm still wearing the mask that I have, which is not as comfortable or cool looking, but I'll make do with what I have. Coming up, we're right now talking with longtime head basketball coach at Spring Hill, and then he went over to the University of Mobile for a couple decades and returned back to the Hill. Now the athletic director, Joe Nyland, joins us here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Good afternoon, guys.
Coach, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. There's a lot to talk about, even though we're in a COVID-19 environment. And I know, being the director at Spring Hill College, the decision was made. You guys waited as long as you could as a school, and the decision was made to go ahead and postpone fall athletics. Kind of tell us where the conference stood on that and where Spring Hill College is with the pandemic.
Well, yes, it really started a little over a week and a half ago. Morehouse College, they looked at bringing their football players in and just realized that they wouldn't have the ability to do what they needed to do to work along the guidelines. And then that kind of sent the conference into a pause on what needed to be done. And last Wednesday, the presidents voted, I think it was 8-4. You know, in football, Corey, such a big part of the SIAC, so a lot of this was football-driven.
Mm-hmm.
But the presidents felt that it was the best thing to do. Now, individually, we could still play, and we have our men's and women's soccer teams play in the Gulf South Conference. The Gulf South is not postponed athletics or suspended them yet. So we haven't made the final decision. We're going to wait and see what the Gulf South says. It's going to be obviously very hard for volleyball and cross country, our SIAC sports, in the fall to get a schedule. And we're also looking, can we do it and follow the NCAA guidelines, the CDC protocols, and look out for the welfare of our student-athletes and staff. So, you know, we're going to wait, see what the Gulf South says, but that's what happened.
Now, with the teams that you have there at Spring Hill that are in the SIAC, women's volleyball, right, and the cross-country teams, you mentioned that there might be a possibility that you could play, still find a way to get them out there. Is that right?
Well, I mean, we're looking at that. I just don't know if it's very realistic, because what's happened is, you know, the other conference that haven't decided yet, like the Gulf South, the the Sunshine State, the Peach Belt, most of those are going to conference only, like the bigger schools.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't probably be able to fill a schedule. And, you know, although I think volleyball and cross country are maybe two sports that you could play, you know, we're still evaluating, you know, are we going to be able to actually practice and play in the environment we're in right now? And according to the NCAA guidelines, we're not even in phase one of resocialization because of the amount of virus in our area.
Yeah, that's huge, Coach. And questions that I have in regards to how you go about being the athletic director, one of the biggest things is always budgets. I mean, you go in, you look at your budgets, you're talking about, you know, schools and universities losing hundreds of thousands of dollars by participating against other conferences in which they get that big payday. But when you start eliminating certain teams or being able to get that big payday, how does that affect you financially? And from a scholarship student athlete standpoint, will it affect the athletes in your conference moving forward?
Well, you know, and that was one of the things that was concerning in football, because our football schools do have some classics and some paydays. The rest of the sports at the Division II level, now our basketball team, they don't have the huge ones, but our men's and women's basketball team has some guaranteed contracts this fall that if we're not able to play our winter sports in November, you know, we may not be able to get those paydays, and they help our budgets, yes. So the other thing is, at the small college level, what's more important to small colleges, whether they're Division II or NAI or Division III, is that your student athletes come to school, because not many of them are on full scholarships, and it's very important that they come to school and pay their tuition and pay their dorm fees. That's how we make budgets. And you know, if we don't have sports and we're not on, you know, we're online instead of in person, that could be very damaging to a lot of colleges throughout the country.
We're talking with Joe Nyland, the athletic director at Spring Hill College. I want to talk a little golf with you. Now, we just got done talking about the PGA Tour, and of course, the pros have been able to go out and play golf, and they've had all the tests and so on and so forth. But I imagine it might be a bit of a different scenario for the college teams to get back out onto the course.
Yeah, and that's the biggest problem, Dalton, I think, right now. And yeah, I was kind of yesterday in the same spot Justin Thomas was on that playoff hole. I was behind trees all yesterday.
Oh, man. But, I can identify with that.
The biggest problem small colleges and even Division I schools have is being able to test regularly.
Mm-hmm.
The pro sports can do that. You know, they have the resources. But you would have to test pretty regularly to, you know, to be able to make sure that you know, your athletes are healthy when they're competing.
Yeah, that's huge, making sure your student athletes are healthy at all times, Coach. You being a former basketball coach and being a basketball guru, go back to March and take this through in the mind as an athletic director, but also as a fan. When this started occurring back in March, you heard the positive test in the NBA, and then they started talking about cancellations of the local tournaments in regards to conference tournament-wise, and then again, you have the whole March Madness eradicated. Did you think maybe 6 months later we would still be talking about this type of pandemic still hindering the ability for student athletes to go ahead and participate like they did in January?
Corey, I never thought, you know, of course, you know, I just follow what I read and what I hear on TV, but I thought that somehow we would be by this point. And you know, obviously, I think we're here in Mobile County, we're still in phase one.
Yes.
We haven't even got that downward trend, and you know, not having the NCAA basketball tournament. I mean, who would ever thought that would be canceled? And so, yeah, it's been really a very interesting time period, and like you hear all the time, very unprecedented.
Coach, I want to ask you, and we got a couple minutes here left with you, one of the most famous Spring Hill alumni, and there have been a lot of famous alumni to come from Spring Hill College, but Frank Bowling passed away over the weekend at the age of 88 right here in his hometown of Mobile. Of course, he played baseball and basketball at Spring Hill, graduated in the class of 1954 before he went on to his great major league career. I wanted to get your thoughts on the passing of a Mobile legend, and then not just what he meant to the city, but specifically Spring Hill College.
Well, you know, I just saw Frank right before the pandemic outbreak at Good Friday Mass at the college. Frank was there, and I stopped, and he looked great. Stopped and asked him, because we're putting a Hall of Fame committee together, which he was one of the founders of the Spring Hill College Hall of Fame, and he was on our committee. And I stopped him and asked. He said, "Oh, sure, would love to be part of it again." And you know, of course, the pandemic broke and everybody was locked down. So, you know, what a great athlete, what a great ambassador. Both him and his brother Milt were great supporters of their alma mater, Spring Hill College, and you know, just a really fine man. You know, I knew his son Chris and his wife, Chris's wife Lisa. And good people, and very proud that Frank Bowling was a Spring Hill grad. And it's sad because we lost Frank, and then back in April we lost Jules Mounier, who was a tremendous Spring Hill athlete. So we lost here in the last couple months two of the greatest athletes in Spring Hill history and great supporters of the college.
Yeah, they definitely represented Mobile well and Spring Hill College. And we really appreciate you coming on with us, Joe, and hopefully get to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, great talking to you guys. And stay safe.
Do the same, Coach.
You too. That's Spring Hill College Athletic Director Joe Nyland joining us right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. All right, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about that NBA bubble. They've already had two try to burst the bubble and leave. We'll tell you who coming up and why they left the NBA bubble and what their punishment is. More coming up on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
All right, this is Sports Night. And this is FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty with you on this Monday night. Ian Blair on the board. Want to thank Spring Hill College Athletic Director Joe Nyland for coming on with us. And I guess, Corey, this would be one of the few instances where a college is probably pretty happy right now to not have a football team and not have to depend on the income. I mean, it's great to have a football team when there's football being played, but when you depend on the team there to prop up the rest of your athletics, there are a lot of universities that are in a tight spot if there is no football played this fall. Spring Hill College doesn't necessarily have to worry about that. They do have to worry about the rest of these cancellations, but just something to think about. You know, Stanford, I think, who they pride themselves on having so many different sports for student athletes to come to their school and play. I think they had 38 sports at Stanford, and they had to cut 11 of them already. And that's before the Pac-12 even made their decision about moving to conference only. And we still have to see if the football is even played. But for a college like Spring Hill, they don't necessarily rely on that football money to get them through the rest of the year.
It's huge. I mean, Dalton, the revenue that you're looking at a Tuskegee garnering, a Morehouse garnering by coming down here and playing in the Gulf Coast Challenge, or Tuskegee playing a big school, the money that they lose, again, I look forward to seeing what we're going to do from a scholarship standpoint, and that's the biggest thing. When you start talking about those financial dollars, how do you sustain and maintain those scholarships moving forward? And I think that's something that Coach Nyland will stay on top of, as well as coaches across the country, as these payday, these large paydays are something these schools must have to sustain athletics.
Yeah, well, we're in a wait-and-see situation with all the college athletics, but the pro sports are starting, getting started, getting ready to get started. The MLS, they began their MLS's back tournament last week, lost two teams because of coronavirus. The Dallas FC and Nashville SC also had nearly, I think, 10 positive tests on both teams. They both got kicked out of the tournament, but they continue to play. Now, the NBA, they all arrived last week to their bubble in Orlando, and on social media, of course, you had Rajon Rondo calling his room there at whichever, and I know the Lakers, they're a top team, so they got the best hotel on the Disney property, and he was still saying it was like a Motel 6. So different strokes for different folks there. I mean, you or I, Corey, we'd probably be all right being holed up in a room like that for 48 hours. Not Rajon Rondo, and he actually got injured here on one of their first few days of practice. He's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks, a broken thumb, and that's going to leave the Lakers pretty light in the backcourt, you know? I mean, they're a team that should do pretty well. I mean, we all expect them to at least play pretty well into this little NBA tournament that they have going on, but with Avery Bradley already opting out of the season, you're down Rajon Rondo now. That leaves you with Alex Caruso, Quinn Cook, not much of a backcourt left, but then again, they have LeBron James bringing the ball up the court, so all you really need are people for LeBron to pass to and hit a few threes. But still, the loss of Rajon Rondo, we're talking about a guy who has been through the ringer in the NBA playoffs. That's a lot of experience that you're leaving off the court.
It is. It's something that I know that when the head coach of the Lakers came in, Vogel, he was not looking forward to not having Rajon Rondo. And it's one of those unfortunate situations that if you do try to bring somebody in, they have to be quarantined to get inside mm-hmm. that bubble. So it's not like they'll have immediate help in that situation, Dalton. But to go back on Rondo complaining, I'm sick and tired. I don't want to hear diddly squat from any NBA player about the conditions that they're in. You chose to be in that bubble. Mm-hmm. You could have opted out. I don't want to hear crap about what you have to wear, what you don't have to wear. The players were complaining because they were going to have to get dressed in their game apparel on the bus or in their team hotel and then travel in there instead of wearing what they wanted to change in the locker room. Quit being crybabies, man. We know you're millionaires and billionaires and all that other kind of stuff. Play the game of basketball again inside of the bubble that you chose to be a part of, mm-hmm. but don't complain about the conditions because they're going to get better.
Yeah, they will get better. And I think family, friends, they're allowed to start visiting after the second round of the playoffs. That's something I can kind of identify with if they're upset. Maybe not upset, but at least sad that they're not able to see their family, especially these guys with young kids. But you've already had a couple players break their bubble quarantine and have to go back into quarantine. And a couple hilarious stories, a couple guys you probably haven't heard of before, Houston Rockets forward Bruno Caboclo, and then you've got Sacramento Kings center Rashawn Holmes. They both already broke their NBA bubble restrictions. I guess the deal was once these 22 teams got down to Orlando, they were supposed to quarantine in their rooms for 48 hours, and that's where these pictures of the cafeteria food that they were getting, that was while they were quarantined in their rooms. I guess after this all ends, they're going to be able to eat some pretty nice food from the Disney World property. But one of them, I think Caboclo, he broke his 48-hour quarantine and didn't know that he wasn't allowed to just leave his room, so he had to go back into quarantine. Then you have Kings center Rashawn Holmes, who made it through that 48-hour window, but then ordered delivery food and left the Disney campus to get his delivery food. And I think you were talking earlier, his mom got onto him for eating. She said, the only food you need to be leaving the bubble for is my home-cooked food. But you got a couple guys that have already broken quarantine.
That was the funniest part of the situation, that his mom chimed in on Twitter, Rashawn Holmes, and his mom is a doctor, Dr. Ledesia Holmes, and she said, you crossed the line for your mama's cooking only. Mm-hmm. And I was not in Florida, sir. So she chimed in on that. And it's going to cost them, again, you know, it can cost you up to 1% of your salary for every game missed. So that could possibly be up to $50,000 per game missed for any future violations by any player that is inside of the bubble.
Well, I think it shows you that this is going to be a lot more difficult for the players to do than many of us think. You know, we're just, for the most part, common folk out here that are like, hey, to make those NBA salaries and to play a game and get paid for it, I would go through quarantine. I would do whatever. But these NBA players, this is going to be tough for them. And I think it was Stephen A. Smith who was saying, you know, with families not able to visit until after the second round of playoffs, you have a lot of married guys that are probably used to a little something back home that they don't get in the NBA bubble. But you have a lot of single guys, too, who are probably pretty popular on some of those dating apps when they go to these different cities, Tinder and the like. And you've already got, and I don't know how true this is, but on Twitter, this Instagram model. And, you know, professional athletes and Instagram models, they get along very well.
So you're saying that I can't come inside the bubble if I am an Instagram model?
They did not write out anything in the contract that said Instagram models could come in, but families couldn't. So you have this Instagram model, Anna Maya, and she hopped on Twitter and Instagram, I guess yesterday. She said, "I already got invited to the bubble. Yeah, the season is definitely ending early." So when you've got NBA players breaking quarantine to get delivery food and apparently inviting Instagram models to come to the room, that spells trouble. I'm not sure if we're going to get this NBA season finished like so many thought we would.
And the thing is, you are inside of, you know, Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida, to where strict regulations are being put on by NBA commissioner. And we just mentioned that what can happen, but with the constant test, if for some reason you do get outside of that bubble, that's why I just don't see how it's going to – the team who wins the championship, there'll be a huge asterisk, and meaning that team sacrificed a lot to win that championship, and they didn't put themselves first, and they put the team first and followed all the guidelines and rules.
Yeah, I pity any of the Los Angeles Lakers that break quarantine, because I think LeBron James will not be happy with that. I think my prediction is that LeBron James wants to win this championship more than anybody else in Orlando, so that'll be interesting. And then another team that's a contender here, the Houston Rockets, who I think maybe this break benefits them as much or more than anybody except for the New Orleans Pelicans. A lot of people were wondering where their two stars were. You had James Harden and Russell Westbrook did not travel with the rest of the team to Orlando, and now we know why. Russell Westbrook wasn't with the team. He announced today that he is in quarantine after he tested positive for COVID-19. He put a pretty good message out there on Instagram and Twitter. He said he's feeling well. He's quarantined, looking forward to joining his teammates when he's cleared. And then he said, please take this virus seriously. Be safe and mask up. But what Russell Westbrook, it looks like after his quarantine, he'll be able to join the team and play, which is great news. What we need to see now is the news update on James Harden, and then you have another Rocket, Luke Mbamute, who also didn't come with the team to the bubble. Is James Harden going to also announce that he tested positive? I guess we'll have to wait and see. I did see a great tweet over the weekend that said Harden does like to travel in isolation. So, you know, because he's always traveling with the ball. Maybe he's actually just wanting to come down on his own separate from the team. But maybe it makes sense for some of these guys. It's better that they test positive prior to rather than once they get into the tournament.
It's one of those situations, again, Dalton, to where it's just the unknown. You're dealing with the unknown in regards to the Houston Rockets now are without four of their players on their roster coming into the bubble. And some of these teams are battling for playoff positions. So if you're a play-in team and you have anybody test positive for the coronavirus, or if you have an injury, it dramatically alters the seeding of the conference championships.
Mm-hmm. And for Houston, you know, they've got the 8 regular season games like everyone else. Right now they're sitting 6th in the Western Conference, but they're basically tied with the Oklahoma City Thunder, Dallas Mavericks, and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz only have one game on them. What's at stake there? Whoever falls into the 7th seed has to face the LA Clippers coming up. Either the Denver Nuggets or the LA Clippers, but more likely the LA Clippers in the first round of the playoffs. That's not a team that you want to draw early on. So the regular season, or at least the ending of the regular season coming up, does have a lot of ramifications for these teams. And it'll be interesting to see. But once again, that season gets started. I think they're going to start the exhibition games up here over the next couple of weeks. And then the first two games are coming up on Thursday, July 30th. A game I can't wait for. Utah plays New Orleans. That'll be the first game played at 5:30 on that July 30th, and it'll air on TNT, and then you have the Clippers and Lakers after that. So I'm glad we're talking about sports coming back, NBA, NHL. I'm just hoping that no more players are breaking quarantine, and especially for Instagram models. You can wait a couple weeks, right?
You're going to have to wait if you want to win, Dalt. You're going to have to wait.
All right, coming back, we'll talk about that name change for the Washington Redskins. I have the odds on what their new team name will be. And also, college football, is it going to be played this fall? Lots to talk about coming up on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, and Ian Blair on the board with us. Coming up next, Sweet Home Canabama with Jennifer Boozer. And, you know, we've talked about some big news today with the SEC Athletic Directors meeting. They said they're going to wait until later this month to make a decision on not just whether they're going to move to conference-only play, which they kind of might be forced into by the rest of these Power 5 conferences, but whether football will be played at all this fall. I still would put my money on football being played, and I put my money on that because there is so much money wrapped up in college football that I don't see how they don't find some form or fashion to play. But the other big news today came in a not as much a press conference, but more like a press release earlier today from the Washington Redskins and Dan Snyder. And I guess they wanted to use the Redskins logo one last time before they bid it adieu. They put it right there on the press release that said, hey, you know, we mentioned a couple weeks ago that we're going to talk about and research changing the name of our team. That's after so many people have complained about it, you know, the Redskins being a racial slur for Native Americans. And the odds are out for what the new team name will be. Today they just said they're retiring the name. They did not announce what the new team name will be. And I have the odds right here for what they will be called. Right now there's two that are in the lead, and I don't really understand why one of these is tied for the best odds, but the Red Tails and the Red Clouds are currently the clubhouse favorite to be the new team name. Now, they did say that they want to keep the burgundy and gold colors, and the new head coach, Ron Rivera, said he wanted kind of a military theme with the team name, which is why, to me, I think Red Tails makes a whole lot of sense. And Red Tails would, of course, be with the Tuskegee Airmen from World War II, from right here in Alabama, the all-black fighter pilots that fought in World War II. I think Red Tails is an outstanding name. My only beef with this is I wish that there was an Alabama pro team that could be called the Red Tails instead of some team from D.C.
Yeah.
But right now I would say Red Tails is probably the favorite. Even though they have Red Clouds, I don't like Red Clouds as a team name. Warriors is at 3-1 odds. The Washington Warriors, a little bit of alliteration there. The Presidents are the fourth best odds right here. Washington Presidents. Then you have the Washington Monuments, which, you know, there's a certain segment of the population actually calling for the Washington Monument to be brought down now. I mean, what kind of world are we living in? But I don't think they'll go Washington Monuments. The Washington Americans has 8-1 odds. The Washington Hogs, which makes sense. You know, the fans there, they identify as hogs sometimes. They got the pig noses there. Washington Generals, which have been synonymous with losing for the last 40, 50 years to the Harlem Globetrotters. The Washington Lincolns, Washington Federals, Washington Senators, and the Washington Founders. One I don't see here are the Washington Red Wolves, which has been gaining some steam online also. Right now, I'd say they're probably going with either the Red Tails or the Red Wolves. Do you have a favorite out of any of those, Corey?
You know, I like the Washington Presidents. And again, the Washington Generals. I think that those two names right there are my favorite names. And 620 billion reasons to change this name. That sponsorship dollars, that's what was given by a variety of sponsorships, but the largest being with FedEx, mm-hmm. a 27-year deal, $205 million worth that they signed. That's why it's FedEx Field in Washington where they play. But, Dalton, I like the Washington name to be changed again. Presidents or Generals?
Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed, but in that press release, the first thing that they mentioned were the sponsors. They wanted to make the sponsors happy. Money makes the world go round. Doesn't matter how many public opinion polls were out there, until FedEx, Pepsi, and Nike started to pull their money, that's when Daniel Snyder decided to make the move. And also, another reason they have yet to announce the new name of the team, a very smart man in Virginia, Alexandria, a realtor in Alexandria, Virginia, went ahead and trademarked all of these potential names that the Washington Redskins could possibly change to. I don't know who's in the business department there for Daniel Snyder, but you got to be a little bit more on top of your game. This guy, he went ahead and trademarked Washington Red Wolves, Washington Tribe, Red Tails, Monuments, Veterans, pretty much every team that I just mentioned that they could possibly change their name to. He trademarked that. So if you're wondering why they went ahead and announced today that they're getting rid of the Redskins name but haven't yet announced the new team name, they're going to have to buy a trademark off of a guy. And those are the people that I wish I could be more like, because they find a way to make money. I would have never thought to trademark these team names.
As soon as it was thought about, I mean, the possible names, how Washington Red Tails got tied in, I'm not quite sure. But again, like you
Reddit.
Said,
it was a person on Reddit brought that up, actually.
And that's just, again, brilliance and just thinking forward. But if you want to think outside the box, I think that maybe you let the fans possibly, because, I mean, you look at the Huntsville Trash Pandas being a double
Rocket City, a double A
baseball affiliate. But sometimes when you let the fans get involved, they feel like they have a lot of worth, and I think that that's an interesting situation that you could do. So just some food for thought there, but you're right, to know that you have that trademarked, you're going to get paid.
Yeah, some more NFL news today. Oakley, apparently, and I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, that Oakley was making a full face mask for NFL players as they return to the field, because, of course, you already have the Oakley visors that are worn by so many. And Oakley, we're talking about making these full face masks in order to, I guess, kind of help keep spit off of players, keep them from, when they're yelling, spitting on the other players as we deal with this new coronavirus reality. And they showed the blueprints, the pictures of this new Oakley mouth shield that they're going to maybe have players wearing as soon as the next couple weeks when training camp opens. My problem with this new Oakley mask is that there are like a million holes in them. It's not going to do a whole lot for what they're trying to accomplish here. They kind of look cool. I'm not a running back that runs a 4.3 40, so I don't know how that would keep me from breathing, or whether it would stop you from being able to have your full airflow capacity there on the helmet. But it's certainly an interesting look. And if these actually work, I think they need to get these to the colleges as soon as possible, because anything that can help make this college football season run, they need to make that happen. But Oakley coming out with these new face shields.
And again, it just boils down to safety. What can we do to enhance the safety? And I see high school players tweeting all the time, as well as college players, wear your mask so I can wear mine. And it's just a situation with the ordinance being here in Mobile mandating that you do wear a mask. If that's what we're going to see, if we want to curb it, that's what you're going to have to see. And this situation, Dalton, you're talking about the billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see that you're seeing professional sports go ahead and proceed, whether it's hockey, whether it's tennis, whether it's golf, whether it's UFC, you know, your football, your basketball, and your baseball. You're also, you see the cancellation of junior college, or the postponement of junior college football until the spring. These sports that are collegiately still make billions of dollars off of television revenue, but not the type of money that is in professional sports.
Yeah, and one thing that professional sports have going for them is money. And also, they don't have nearly as many players, although, like the NFL, they've got a ton of players that they have to worry about, but it pales in comparison to what these schools, these college campuses, have to do to get their student athletes out there on the field. We talked earlier about the SEC. They said they're going to make the decision later this month. I'm going to go ahead and ask for your opinion. What do you think the SEC will decide to do? Do you think they go conference only? Do you think they try to play some of these non-Power 5 schools or not?
Conference only, in a situation to where you have 14 to 15 weeks, you put a bye week between every game, and you're allowing those teams, the rivalries, to still take place. And if you have to go ahead and break it down, you don't go cross division, you just go within your division and maybe pick one or two extras. But I think that if somebody tests positive and you do have that week in between, it gives you a little bit more of a buffer to adjust.
That's interesting. I haven't heard of the weekly buys to give them a little extra time. You know, I hate it for schools like South Alabama and Troy, who had big SEC matchups this year. They had a lot of money to make in those matchups. I'm hoping that they push those off to next year and don't completely cancel them. Well, that does it. Another fast hour of Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. We'll be back next Monday night to hopefully talk about the resumption of sports.